Which way do the Red River run? Which way do the Red River run, poor boy? Which way do the Red River run? Oh, look where the sun done gone. Look where the sun done gone. Look where the sun done gone down here. Look where the sun done gone. Well, it gone, God knows where. Gone, God knows where. Yeah, where the sun done gone down here. Well, it gone, God knows where. Which way do the Red River run? Which way do the Red River run? Which way do the Red River run, poor boy? Which way do the Red River run? Oh, honey, babe, I'm all laid down. Honey, babe, I'm all laid down. I'm all laid down on my way to the ground. Which way do the Red River run? Oh, I've been a poor boy and I'm a long ways from home. Been a poor boy and I'm a long ways from home. Been a poor boy and I'm a long ways from home down here. Been a poor boy and I'm a long ways from home. Which way do the Red River run? Which way do the Red River run? Which way do the Red River run, poor boy? Which way do the Red River run? Well, run north and south. Then run north and south. Which way do the Red River run, poor boy? Well, run north and south. And it's right by my sweet mama's house. It's right by my sweet baby's house. Which way do the Red River run, poor boy? Well, it's right by my sweet baby's house. Well, look where the sun done gone. Look where the sun done gone. Look where that even sun done gone down here. Well, look where that even sun done gone. Look away to the Red River run. Which way to the Red River run? Which way to the Red River run, poor boy? Which way to the Red River run?
So here we are for another episode of Greenhorn Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. My name is Severin. I'm your host. Once again, we are here in Hudson downtown on the park right across from Greenhorn's world headquarters in the fabulous studios of WGXC, community powered radio for Hudson Valley. And I am joined today by Camilla Hammer, who's coming from New York City. Hi, Camilla.
Hello.
How's it going down there in the city?
It's good. It's cold, but yeah. It's good. Yeah.
It's good and it's cold. Tell us what. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the project that you're involved in.
So I work at the Battery Urban Farm. I'm the farm manager down here, and we are an urban farm located in Battery Park. And so we were started by the Battery Conservancy earlier this year, actually, in our first season. And we're mostly an educational farm. We're entirely open to the public, and we have 8 school groups who come down every week, and we teach them about growing vegetables. And then we run a farm stand, and we're hoping to start a CSA this year. And we also give a lot of our food to some of our school cafeterias, and we've been working with some restaurants this year, and so kind of trying to find our way and find out the best place for the food to go. So that's still kind of a work in progress.
So you're figuring out all the practical considerations of running a project in the middle of an urban metropolis. And
yes,
what was the guiding intention when the conservancy? Well, maybe we should back up entirely. Tell us about the piece of land, the Battery Park. the history of that land and how it's come to a place where they're trying to get involved in a community project like that.
Yeah. So the land that we're on right now, it's right in Battery Park, which was the first piece of land to be purchased, actually, by the Dutch and the Native Americans. And so originally it was when the Dutch purchased it, it became farmland. So we have all these old maps that have, you know, you see people's houses and behind them were all their little gardens. So part of why we started it is the Battery Conservancy, who I work for, is really interested in, you know, kind of our historical roots and going back to those roots. And they were basically approached by a group of students, downtown students, who wanted to learn how to grow their own vegetables. And the Battery Conservancy was looking for an outreach opportunity and to kind of like bring the community more into the park and to establish some relationships with the people downtown. And so they decided to make this kind of a larger project. And so the idea really was to just bring people into the park to teach people about growing vegetables, and especially to be kind of like an educational, open to the public, almost like a museum, like a farm museum. And so I was hired in January to basically implement it. And then, yeah, we really, from there, kind of tried to figure out what we really wanted to do. And I think all this, throughout this first year, I've been really trying to figure out what our identity is and also what we would be best utilized for, not only what we're good at, but also what the community needs and what, you know, what the space would be best used for.
Well, I mean, because you're so close into the city, it would seem, you know, like an obvious thing that you would become kind of a community facility and provide mm-hmm. access for, you know, young people especially who are looking to reconnect or have their mothers, whose mothers are interested for them to reconnect with the soil and with plants and animals and things.
Definitely.
What intention are you bringing to this project? Like, you're in the early part of your agricultural career. What are you kind of hoping to get out of it?
For myself?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of my dream, actually, just because I went to a college in New York, and I really love New York City, but I also really love farming, and I love being outside, and I always kind of felt like two people, so the fact that I can kind of bring these two sides of myself together is really amazing, just on a personal level. And I'm just learning so much, actually, from starting a project, from being a manager, which I've never done before, you know, interacting with the public, and really, you know, it's really different coming from, like, having worked as an apprentice on lots of farms to suddenly having my own space, and it's an urban space, and it's, you know, open to the public, and suddenly there are very different values at play here than if I were on just a production-oriented farm. Especially around, you know, trying to find our identity, really, that's a really new thing for me, and so, yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm learning more than I can even absorb sometimes. And also just about growing, you know, now being the one who's telling people what to do rather than having people tell me what to do.
Well, so one of the other cool projects that I want to make sure we go over is this fencing, turkey fencing situation. Before we go into anything else, I think it's critical to hello?
Everyone? Oh. Hello, it's Everyone Marcia.
Oh dear. I'm on the radio and I just pushed the wrong buttons. Hold on. Hello? Oh dear.
Hello?
Sorry, I think so my call got call waiting, and then it's okay because we can edit it out.
Okay.
But we're back. So my question was, can you explain about this turkey fence that you have?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we were given, there was this sculpture on top of the Met called Big Bamboo, and I think there was something like 15 or 20,000 poles of bamboo that the Starn brothers, two artists, created this kind of like constantly evolving structure out of. And when they were done, they had all this bamboo, and they basically gave it to three different organizations, and the Battery Conservancy was one of them. So when they decided to start this farm, they thought, oh, this is perfect. We'll use it to make a fence. And they actually were approached by an architect, Scott Dugan, and he designed this fence, and he was really inspired by Zelda, who who is our resident turkey that lives in Battery Park. She's a wild American turkey that just flew into the park 7 years ago, I think, and has never left, and she just kind of wanders around. And so he kind of fell in love with her, like most people do. And so he decided to make the fence inspired by her. So it's in the shape of a turkey, which presents its own set of challenges for me. But for the most part, people really liked it. It's really beautiful, and it's created some really interesting, I don't know, people respond to it in lots of different ways. Some people think it's really kind of, like, threatening, and other people are really drawn by it. And you can grow things up it, which I really enjoyed.
So essentially, your garden is hemmed in by a fence in the shape of a turkey, made out of bamboo that used to be a sculpture on the roof of a big museum, and put into place by an artist, but a different artist.
Yeah, and by
different artists.
By different artists.
Different artists. Mm-hmm. Many artists. Many farmers.
And all donated. Yeah, all the volunteers, everyone. I was working as a volunteer for the first 4 months, actually. And to this day, I'm still the only person working on the farm who's not a volunteer. So, yeah, it's been a largely volunteer effort, which has been really cool.
So, in this mission, which is to bring young people in touch with the production of food and with the life, the domestic life forms of agriculture, What do you think that is going to be unique in this park, this oldest agricultural part of New York? And what lessons are you hoping to impart to your many, many thousands, I think, of visitors that will be really relevant to them as they're kind of approaching the very practical concerns of America today?
I think that, you know, what we're trying to teach and what I'm hoping to teach people is slightly different from what we do provide in some ways, because, you know, a lot of the kids that we get, honestly, there was a girl a few months ago who had never seen a worm before. You know, like, we get a lot of kids who really have spent very little time outside, and most of them have never seen what they eat growing. You know, they almost don't even understand the connection when they come to the farm. And so in a lot of ways, we're starting really basic at that, and especially in our first year, really we were just teaching them, you know, the different parts of plants, how plants worked, and really just exposing them to the plants. I think certainly for us, we're trying to show people how easy it is. You know, like, we didn't have very much materials, and we just kind of did it, and especially in an urban space, you know, I don't think we're really... We do grow a lot, but we're not production-oriented specifically. So I think it's just really exposing people to all different kinds of plants, the beauty of plants, and to just kind of the inherent lessons that you get from growing plants about patience and, I don't know, dedication and hard work and that kind of stuff. And it's also really, we try really to be very accessible. That's one thing. In New York City, there are urban farms, but a lot of them are, you know, they're up on roofs. It's hard to find land, and we're really lucky in that we have this public space, and, you know, there are thousands and thousands of tourists in Battery Park. So that's another big part of our job, is to just be open and accessible to tourists, answering questions, showing them around, and showing people what can be done, you know? Like, I mean, we could have one of these in every park in New York, and they could be bigger, too. And I just think, yeah, we're really all about kind of like showing people the potential.
Well, certainly the potential is there and the interest is there and the excitement and engagement with agriculture, I feel, is so zeitgeisty right now in this generation. And you're like, you're in my sister's generation, so you're, I feel like this wave is getting bigger and bigger. What do you see? Well, I mean, I see you welling up in the, like, you know, younger sister generation. What do you see in your younger sisters coming up next? And is it going to get more radical? Is it going to expand? Is this about food justice? Is it about being inside, getting the food into hospitals? Like, where do you see it pointed?
I mean, what I really see, or at least the most urgent thing I see, is to make the food more accessible. And I think there are a lot of different ways to do that. And it's, I think, kind of the biggest problem that I see is, you know, this idea that, like, local food and organic food is this kind of you know, like, it's expensive and it's hard to get and people don't know how to cook it. And I think really that is going to be kind of the future for my generation, especially in an urban setting. You know, finding ways to access people that aren't getting this kind of food, while also working with, you know, different cultures and different vegetables they eat and, you know, being sensitive to that. I think that's really what is going to become more and more important. And also finding a balance between, like, the small farm that provides these kind of specialized, again, this idea of, like, this, like, elitist food versus this giant, you know, like, evil agro, you know, conglomerate. I think that there's kind of a middle ground, you know, feeding a lot of people sustainably, and I think that is going to be a really interesting balance for the next generation to try to find, you know, as people realize that this is, you know, this trend is sticking around, and, you know, how can we make it, how can we, like, keep it growing while keeping the integrity of, you know, some of these values behind it.
Right on. Very practical answer to a very big project. And one that, don't you think it'd be possible within at least one generation to make serious strides in the right direction?
That's, oh, yeah.
I'm always feeling like, you know, give us 25 years, man, we could do almost anything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, like, you know, what happened to me, basically, I always knew I wanted to work somehow with the environment. And I just, from a very young age, was really scared about it. And it just, you know, I studied environmental studies in school, and it just became so clear to me that, you know, the food system was such an important intersection of most of these issues, you know, like water and, I mean, even the healthcare system, like so many different areas that we were concerned about really came down to food. And I think the more that people realize that, and also the more people realize really, like, the pleasure involved, you know, it's this area that is not only really good for the world, but it's good for the individuals who are practicing it, and it feels good, it tastes good, and there's so much goodness, really, when it comes to farming, you know? Well, I think that's why people are so drawn to it.
So drawn to it, so much goodness, and, you know, I'm coming from a more rural perspective up here in the Hudson Valley, mm-hmm. and, you know, when I think about the economic driver that is agriculture, all the stuff that's needed, mm-hmm. all the jobs involved, all the transport and cooling and processing and smoking and chopping and bagging and bunching and fermenting, and it's like, whoa, what a tremendous foundation for economic growth that's really solidly based in the production of something that everyone needs. And what a great initiator for new relationships and innovation. So mm-hmm. I'm feeling like what you're incubating down there, and the kind of joy and rapture and curiosity that you're kindling in the hearts of and young minds that are just mm-hmm. stumbling upon that garden has tremendous import upstream, you know, up in more rural places. Are you ever gonna leave the city, Camilla?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's something I'm really, you know, I love urban agriculture, and I think it's really important. I don't know if I'm the best person to do it, if it's really where I fit in the most. Part of me just wants to kind of, like, you know, start my own farm here and be done with it, but then I really miss, you know, I was educated in a rural setting in farming, and I really miss it, especially not having livestock. That's been really hard for me.
So
you know,
let's
just mostly cooking their vegetables.
Yeah, not enough animals in the city. It's always a big problem. Not enough birds.
Yeah.
But let's talk about your education. Like, here you are running this project. It's a tremendous good fortune to have the experience of starting something from scratch. And even if you fail miserably, you will have learned more than could be bought at any program. What was your little 1, 2, 3 to get there? And what mm-hmm. what were your farm apprenticeships like?
So I first started farming when I was abroad in India. And I was living in an eco-village there called Oroville. And I worked on a small farm called Solitude Farm. And they grew, it was with all Indians I was working with. And they grew rice and papaya and bananas. And it was this really awesome, actually, English guy who was running the farm. And he was just so, like, scrappy and amazing. His name is Krishna. And he taught me a lot about, I don't know, he had a real, like, roughness with the farm. Like, he would just pick things off the trees and eat them and then throw them on the ground. I don't think he did any composting. He just threw things on the ground because it's so humid there that everything just decomposes. So, learned a lot from him, and that's kind of when I fell in love with farming. I was studying philosophy, so it was really, like, you know, amazing for me to put my hands in the ground and do things that were concrete. And from there, I took time off school, and I traveled around Europe by myself looking for farms that were self-sufficient and communities that were self-sufficient, and really became interested in this idea of self-sufficiency. Finally ended up, had to come back to school, and so just spent my last year at NYU, and then I moved out to Koblo, California, to work at Live Power, where I met you.
Hold on, we got to talk about Live Power for a second. Live Power is one of the coolest farms. In the world.
In the world, definitely.
Why is that, Camilla?
Well, I think a lot of reasons. I mean, Live Power is where I thought I found self-sufficiency for the first time, I would say. You know, it's a biodynamic farm. It's a horse-powered farm, or horse and human-powered. So they don't use any fossil fuels. They use draft horses. And, you know, they're using a lot of techniques that a lot of people don't do anymore, like hand-hoeing beds and stuff like that. And they're one of the first CSAs, I believe, in the country, maybe in California. And they're run by the Decaturs, who are just like, amazing couple. They've been in this place forever. And it's in this, you know, Round Valley, which is this tiny town of probably, like, 1,000 people surrounded by mountains, really secluded. And they raise all kinds of stuff, you know, sheep, chickens, cattle. They have dairy cows as well, and pigs. And really, yeah, they have almost no inputs. You know, they really are just super self-sufficient, super biodynamic, really strong community there. And, you know, I just, honestly, I feel like I could have worked, like, 4 seasons at another farm and learned less than I learned just at under 1 season there. They just teach such good lessons, you know. Everything from picking the right vegetables to, you know, like the way they do their, you know, soil mix and their seed flats. And just, yeah, I just felt like I learned really well. And I had a great mentor in the farm manager there, Kim, who really just taught me a lot. I didn't even realize how much I knew until I started this project. And I was like, oh, my God, I just had learned, yeah, so much from Live Power. So really grateful to have had that experience.
Well, isn't it nice to enter into the very beginning of your career totally indebted to and doted upon by the previous generation? I feel like it sets us up definitely to be so generous for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. That some people were so patient with me when I was such a pipsqueak. I can't really believe it. And I try to remember that lesson when I meet the next pipsqueaks.
Yeah.
So what are some upcoming events that people who are in the city or in the valley and interested in this sector of educational farms should know about? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you going to do over the winter?
Over the winter, we're really working on our educational program, trying to just formalize it and, you know, give the most that we can to these kids that are coming down. We're also working on hopefully starting a CSA this year, which is going to be big for us. I think we're going to plan an event. We're going to have a planting event in the spring, which is going to be fun. And what else are we working on? I guess we're really just trying to kind of, like, firm down some of these systems. But, I mean, we'll be looking for interns coming up, and hopefully also some people who are going to be kind of educators. So people are in the city and interested in farming, they definitely should contact me. We'll definitely, our staff is, you know, like 10 people, and we'll definitely be looking for those coming up soon.
So you are Camilla Hammer, director of the Battery Park Urban Farm Turkey Project. No, what's it called? What's the website called?
It's called the Battery Urban Farm. The website is thebattery.org, and you can find the farm through there.
Well, I thank you so much, and I do urge you to bring your peoples, your urban farming peoples, up to NOFA, New York for their winter conference. It's in Saratoga, which you can reach with the train. And there's a beginning farmer mixer there and a beginning farmer track and just a tremendous good time to be had by all. So I hope that you go, and I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. This has been another episode of Greenhorn Radio. Radio for you, from the young farmers, and all about the things that we're thinking about of doing with our own hands and our own lives in this valley and beyond. We're here every fourth Monday. No, wait. We're here the fourth Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. on WGXC.
I'm bound to go. I'm gonna leave here running, because walking's mostly slow. Yes, when the moon beats over the mountain, yes, I got to be on my way. And I'm gonna walk this old highway, leave until the break of day. Goodbye, cause I'm gonna walk this old highway, leave until the day I die. Oh, give me one more kiss, baby, yes, just before I go. Cause when I leave this time now, baby, I declare I won't be back no more. I got the key to the highway, yes, and Bill, I'm bound to go. I'm gonna leave here running, because walking's mostly slow.